The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The Champions League, Liverpool impressing Munich and Man City swat aside Schalke to join Spurs and Manchester United in the quarterfinals, while Ronaldo and Juventus see off Atletico and Barca hammer Lyon. In the Championship, it's as you were as the top three all win. There's also a contender for the worst penalty ever. There's plenty of fun in Leagues 1 and 2, and we'll look ahead to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup, answer your questions and get Barry to explain Brexit. All that on today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, good morning.
Hello.
We'll wait to the end for you to summarise what's happening in the British Parliament at the moment to help everyone. Philippe Auclair, lovely to see you.
You don't want me to explain what's happening in British
Listen,
Parliament.
If we asked you that at the end of part three, there would be so much swearing and it would go on for 6 hours. But I'm happy to try. Faker Others, how are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. We've been seeing you sort of windswept on Sky at various Football League matches. I mean, there's not enough money in the world to put me on a gantry like that. You're a hero. And
really?
Britain needs heroes.
Yeah, well, okay, I'll take that. I'll definitely take that. I felt like a hero on Tuesday night at Lincoln. It was utterly ridiculous how windy and cold it was. It was horrible. And I forgot to put my makeup on as well. So all in all, looking great.
There was one stage quite late on Tuesday night. I was sitting in a pub having a nice pint. It was my birthday pint. And
I forgot to say happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Barry.
It was noted that you forgot. Well, you and many other people.
But what you need to do, Barry, is go on Twitter and say, thank you for all the birthday messages. I feel so blessed. And then people go, oh, it's his birthday. I see.
And I was thinking, well, this is all very pleasant. I wonder how it could be slightly more pleasant. And then I looked up at the telly in the corner and there was Carruthers at Sinsel Bank looking like the front man of a Norwegian death metal band with her hair hanging down, glaring upwards.
Do you know what? I actually considered going to watch Cambridge United v Crewe. And I just, on Tuesday, and you know, I don't want to be a fair weather fan in terms of how well they're playing or not, but a fair weather fan in literally, it was just too cold and wet. And I just thought, I don't want to be there. As it finished goalless, I was like, what a great decision.
You definitely took the right call. But cheers for the message with your warm pint in your warm pub, Barry.
It was a cold pint in a warm pub.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping it was warm.
Anyway, perhaps more important than those games in League Two, let's start Bayern Munich 1, Liverpool 3. Jurgen Klopp says, we set a mark for Liverpool Football Club tonight that we are back on the international landscape as a football club. Philippe, do you agree with Jurgen?
It might sound surprising considering they went to the final last time round that they've only just arrived, but I think it felt like one of those performances where, yes, they're now part of that super elite. The manner of the performance was quite remarkable. The way they controlled the game, even when they were not so great, and actually they were not that great yesterday. They had flashes where you saw the brilliance that we appreciated last season. But what you've got now is, I think, a team that looked relaxed in its situation as leading the Bayern Munich, even after conceding a very silly goal. You had defensive solidity. You had, again, this extraordinary capacity that they have when one of their front three is not quite functioning to have another one who immediately takes the mantle, which somebody actually compared to what was happening at Manchester United, sorry, Liverpool fans, when they had Rooney, Tevez and Rooney and Ronaldo. So when one of them was not functioning, the other would take over. And this is what's happening at the moment. Sadio Mane is in magnificent form. Salah had a fantastic game, by the way. Something maybe we should have a word about. But yes, it felt like they're genuine top European club again. There's no chance there.
Sadio Mane's opening goal was just utterly ridiculous, Barry. I mean, the first touch is genius. The turn is amazing. The finish. I mean, to even conceive of doing any one of those things in such a short space of time is ridiculous.
It was one of those goals that, well, I can't speak for anyone else, but it had me on my feet, you know, just beaming with pleasure.
Well, ridiculous means provoking laughter, and I think that's, wow,
yeah.
That's what everybody did, really.
You can't really believe what you've just seen. Absolutely astounding. It was helped by some kamikaze goalkeeping from Manuel Neuer, but, you know, he drew Neuer out, did him with the Cruyff turn, and then the finish, because there was, three bodies between him and the goal?
It looked about 20, didn't it?
It was just absolutely wonderful. As good a goal as you see. I don't, and I know we're praising it, I don't think it's getting the credit it deserves. It's just an
Are you saying if Lionel Messi had done that, we'd be going on about it forever?
Well, yes, we would.
Sadio Mane is now Liverpool's outright highest away goalscorer in European Cup Champions League history, one ahead of Gerrard and Firmino.
Really?
Yeah. And he's got 10 goals in 10 games now. So you're right, Philippe. He is to the fore, mm-hmm. and he may continue this, or Firmino may come back. Firmino had one where he controlled the ball and just struck it so sweetly it went wide. Faye, have you noticed that Virgil van Dijk's quite good?
No.
No.
Never heard anyone say it either.
Have a look out for him, because I think he's going to be a player again.
One to watch.
Rio Ferdinand said, didn't he, on TV, saying, you know, he's at a stage in his career where he goes out, it doesn't matter who he's playing against. He just feels like they're not going to beat him.
I know exactly what you mean. Interestingly, I heard your comment on Monday talking about people being sheep and following, you know, the popular opinion. But I would say the one popular opinion that does not require you to be a sheep this season is how fantastic Virgil van Dijk is and what an absolute credit he is to Liverpool and what a difference he's made mm-hmm. to them. You know, there were two standout players yesterday, one at the front, one at the back. You know, Mane and Van Dijk were outstanding.
It's his first Champions League goal for Liverpool. This is from Opta Joe. He's the first Liverpool player to bag a goal and an assist in an away game since 2007 at the Nou Camp, Craig Bellamy.
We'd have been here all day trying to work that out.
Oh, absolutely.
And the cross from Salah for Mane's goal, Philippe.
Absolutely.
There's something beautiful about the outside of the foot cross, isn't there?
And how few people use the outside of the foot these days, it seems to me. And also, which should very much the role that Salah has taken on more recently. Talking about sheep, many people have followed the opinion that Salah is having a kind of mediocre season. Obviously, I haven't seen him play too often because his role has changed a bit because of, you know, his accuracy in front of goal hasn't been quite what it was last time round. But yesterday, it was not actually the only extraordinary moment he produced. There were some sequences of play in the second half where he was really in the tightest of spaces and combining with Alexander-Arnold and one-touch football. And the vivacity of his movement, the intelligence of the movement, and as well, always finding the right angle and looking to pass the ball forward all the time. Absolutely magnificent exhibition by Salah.
They were kind of showboats. They were sort of showboats. Even at 1-0, they were...
You call that showboating?
No, but it sort of felt...
Or was it just being very good?
Well, you're right. It felt like they were sort of teasing Bayern Munich a bit.
Yep. Who were as disappointing as Liverpool were impressive in the way they controlled the game. They looked old, didn't they?
Well, they are old.
Well, I know
quite a lot of them.
I know they are old, but they did look their age, and then some at times.
But they're on good form, aren't they? You know, they're coming right back in the title. I mean, it's hard to work out when you don't watch Bayern Munich week in, week out to know how good a performance this is, or whether Bayern Munich aren't.
Well, I think all you need to know about the performance is from Robert Lewandowski's post-match interview. Now, he looked old and tired as well, I have to say, along with Frank Ribery, notably. But he was very scathing. Like, his assessment of Niko Kovac's tactics could not have been more withering. He was clearly very angry. He probably got himself into trouble. Such was his... it was an attack, really, on his manager's approach to the game. Now, Niko Kovac, I suppose, is not as experienced and wily as Jurgen Klopp in a situation like that. And their tactics were quite negative. And I'm saying that Lewandowski didn't play very well, but he was kind of marooned alone up front, and there wasn't a huge amount he could do. He was getting very little service. I was surprised by Bayern Munich's tactics. And like you say, don't get to see them every week. But Bayern sides of recent years, they were a facsimile of them and a very poor one, you know.
I think it's now coming to the point when it comes to German clubs, you're no more able of talking about their genuine worth when they come to European competitions than, for example, for PSG and Liga. Because obviously there's something, the Bundesliga is going backwards at the moment. The results have been appalling. We saw Schalke putting on one of the most, awful performances you will ever see in the Champions League. And Bayern came to that game on the back of a 6-0 win in the Bundesliga, a bit like Paris Saint-Germain comes to the Champions League on the back of a 6-0 win over Dijon or something like that. That means nothing because the standard is poor, has regressed.
Is it something like 2006 was the last time, I think, the stat is that a German side made the quarterfinal, didn't make the quarterfinals of the Champions League?
Yes, the headline and kicker, German disaster. You're right, first time but since
they,
2006.
They look very slow and ponderous against Liverpool and not bereft of ideas. And they have sort of announced that there will be a major squad overhaul in the summer and they clearly need one, but whether or not Niko Kovac will be the man who's allowed to oversee it or manage them next season, I suppose, remains to be seen. I don't know how.
Should we start a rumour and say Pochettino is going to take over, something like that?
Is there a team in China that's very excited about these overhauls at Real Madrid and Bayern Munich?
Well, Franz Beckenbauer came out and suggested that Jurgen Klopp should take over at Bayern Munich.
As if it were going to happen.
Yeah. Mark Lovell tweets, Robert Lewandowski's failed to score in 7 consecutive Champions League knockout games. So, you know, some vague hypocrisy if he's coming out on the attack. But I suppose if you don't get any service, what can you do? He would have scored yesterday if Matip hadn't put it in, to be fair.
Just similar-ish to that stat, Liverpool have never lost a two-legged tie since Jurgen Klopp took charge.
Have they not?
No.
Interesting. Wow. It's all it's exciting. Finnegan says, if you had to pick a lame pun to describe the absence of German teams in the quarterfinals, would you say the quarterfinals are hands-free or Müller light?
Ooh, very good.
Bayern had 2 shots on target in total across the 2 legs. Were they too defensive in the first leg? They sort of celebrated on the pitch at Anfield. And a nil-nil is not a great score to take back home with away goals, is it? Or is it?
If you look at stats again, I think it's something. The team that draws 0-0 at home over the history of the Champions League and the Europa League is something like 36% chances of progressing. Normally it shouldn't be that great a result, but it all depends on the context, obviously. Yeah. And in this particular case, and there are games with it feels that's going to be a good result. And I remember myself... another game, which was a 0-0, which also felt like a great result at the time, which was Arsenal-Milan 0-0 in 2007-2008. And when I left the game, all the people around me saying they're going to go through. Arsenal are going to go through. You could feel, because it's this stupid rule of the away goal. I don't know if people agree with me on this one, but it's a stupid rule. And which changes absolutely everything when you have a team which is so good on the counter. It depends on how the team is set up to play. A Liverpool away from home, you know, they can. It's not as if they had to make the difference in front of the impassioned crowd, because otherwise, you know, they don't stand a chance.
Aren't UEFA looking to change that rule anyway?
Yes, indeed.
As in, get rid of it, or just make it even more complicated.
As in, get rid of it.
Oh, interesting. So, Man City, as you mentioned, hammered Schalke 7. It looked like a training game, really. Danny Taylor writing, perhaps the scariest part for the other sides in Friday's quarterfinal draw is that there were long spells when it didn't even feel like Pep's team were playing at their maximum point of expression. Can we say anything about it? It equals the Champions League record victory in the competition's knockout stages. Bayern Munich 7, Basel 0 in 2011-2012. With presumably the same starting 11 that Bayern had yesterday.
But again, it shows, I mean, Schalke were second in the German League, weren't they, last year?
They're struggling this year.
They're actually in danger of relegation, and Tedesco shouldn't be in place for too long. But they lost, I think, 4 of their main players, which is another problem with German clubs whose squads are siphoned by the big ones from one season to the next if they do all right. And you saw the result.
Who did it better, Aguero or Messi with the Panenkas? I think Messi's was slightly slower and landed slightly lower. And I think they're two marks of quality in a Panenka.
I think the rhythm of the Messi one was a bit better. There was more fluidity.
Yeah, I think so. You want it to be going so slowly the keeper can stand up again but still not get it. That's the dream. Look, it's a ruthlessness of Manchester City, isn't it, Barry? It's very hard to know what to add to it, but, you know, they beat Rotherham 7-0 and Burton 9-0. When they really want to just keep going, they can.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much you can take from that game. Goals are flying in. Schalke were absolutely useless. The Horio saw you can only beat what's in front of you, but, you know, to beat them so emphatically, almost it's almost cruel, you know? But another magnificent performance. I think City are favourites. You know, Pep Guardiola keeps insisting they're not mature or experienced enough to or good enough to win the Champions League. And I think that's just absolutely absurd thing to say. They're quite clearly on their day the best team in world football.
They had trouble in their qualifying group. They were not great in their qualifying group. Lyon beat them and then drew. A Lyon team which
they are beatable. You know, we've seen, you know, Crystal Palace beat them. But
yeah.
I've said before, I'm boring myself now, you can say, but they are their own worst enemies. I think sometimes they get complacent, but I don't think this is a competition in which they will get complacent.
Duncan Alexander writing, City have scored 61 goals in 2019 so far in all competitions. The next highest Premier League side?
Liverpool?
In 2019?
Yeah.
Oh, in 2019. I'm trying to think. Manchester United?
No. Arsenal, 29. I mean, that's quite extraordinary. Double the next highest in 2019.
They're the most prolific team in top flight history in England. More goals and more wins than any team in Europe's top five leagues as well.
It depends on the draw, crazy, doesn't it? Good, like a City-Barcelona draw would be great, wouldn't it? Look,
but, it's almost as if you've got bottomless reserves of cash, you can buy really good footballers who score lots of goals.
You still have this nagging doubt, wondering if these figures are the kind of figures that Graham Hick had before he joined the England Test team.
I know what you mean.
So who's going to be City's Curtly Ambrose?
Well, I don't know. We'll see that quarterfinals.
Bernardo Silva signed a new 3-year contract extension.
Very good news for Manchester City.
It is. And has he really excelled this season? Is this the season where he's become pivotal to that? I mean, I don't know if any of their midfielders are pivotal because there are so many of them, and it sort of depends on the week. You know, it's Sterling one week and then Sane and then one of the Silvers. I thought in that game against Liverpool I saw a different side of Bernardo Silva, and it made me appreciate him more.
And he set the tone from the word go, I think even from the Community Shield. And in fact, he was City's best player during the first few weeks of the season. He really set them on their way. No, he's absolutely wonderful. He's got such stamina, energy, enthusiasm, and technique. Absolutely wonderful.
Cy Lloyd writes, if you're a United, City, Liverpool or Spurs fan, are happy the other three are also in the Champions League quarterfinals, you are ill. Watching your rivals suffer utterly humiliating exits while your team progresses is what the Champions League is really about. Stop being so nice. Four English teams in the quarterfinals, Barry. Does this prove once and for all that the Premier League is the greatest league in the world?
It proves it's the richest league in the world. I will always maintain the Championship is the greatest league in the world. But, you know, that's my opinion and one to which I will stick.
It's quite surprising to see that since the new format of the Champions League, four English clubs have reached the quarterfinals on four occasions. Last time before that was 2008, 2009. And no other country has produced
four right? clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. I was surprised to. I was pretty sure that Spain had done that at one point, but no, they didn't.
Do you want all English quarterfinals, or would you like them all to be kept apart and then all go out in a tragic quarterfinal and then we say, what's wrong with the Premier League in a couple of months?
I would like them all separate. Personally,
we don't want Man United Liverpool because that'd be two goalless draws.
Yeah, and I think I saw something yesterday that if Manchester City and Manchester United drew each other, we could see like three or four Manchester derbies over the next month or so. Something utterly ridiculous.
I think it's something like four in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
FA Cup. If should they progress, mm-hmm. the 24th of April.
You're right, that's too many.
Yeah.
That's too many of the same match, isn't it? You'd get confused as the players wouldn't know which competition they were in at the time, would they? Anyway, we'll round up the rest of the Champions League in part two.
It's time to focus.
They rush the baby to the hospital, and that's when they start accusing Imelda. They say, well, you tried to kill your daughter.
Today in Focus is the new daily podcast from The Guardian. Join me, Anushka Astana, for the best stories from our journalists around the world. Subscribe now to Today in Focus from The Guardian.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Tomorrow, Barry, me, you, Greg Bukowski and David Squires are going to entertain the people of Hackney.
Good for us.
And what's really nice is my wife is coming to the live show in Hackney.
Is she?
Of Rob Delaney. But, you know, it's close enough, isn't it?
Hmm?
Yeah, he's performing somewhere else in Hackney.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, I almost got her to come to a live show of us. But she decided not to.
So she's going to watch Rob Delaney instead of watching you?
Yes.
Just round the corner?
I mean, she spends more time with me than him.
That's endorsement. Well,
that's what she tells you.
Anyway, we look forward to seeing you. Two other live shows. Tickets selling fast, I believe. People say that anyway. I mean, we might have not sold any, but I think we've sold quite a lot. 22nd of April at SWG3. Someone told me they call it Swedge, but I don't believe they do. In Glasgow, whatever it's called, that's where we are on the 22nd. Me, you, Baz, you and Murray and Wilson. And the 23rd, we're popping over to Belfast, Elmwood Hall. Me, you, Ewan and Lars Sivertsen. Please come and watch us. Juventus 3, Atletico 0. Richard Martin, good stat. Atletico have been knocked out of every Champions League knockout stage they've been in since 2013-14 by a team containing Cristiano Ronaldo. last 16 quarters, semis, the final, if the final counts. Doesn't feel like you're knocked out of the final, but even still, a good stat. What can we say about Cristiano Ronaldo, Philippe?
I don't know. I'm looking at the picture of Cristiano Ronaldo. Really helps on a podcast, doesn't it, to say things like that. Mm. But I just read something which is just astonishing, that apparently he has a running jump of 78 centimetres, which is 8 centimetres more than the average NBA player. Right?
I don't even know what 78 centimetres looks like. Speak in that feet. Feet and inches.
That would
3 feet?
No, a bit less than that.
2.5 feet.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm.
No, he was absolutely astonishing. And one of those
doesn't seem that high.
It is.
What, to jump? Of course it is.
No, I don't think it's that high either.
This is...
He's not doing a tuck jump. He's actually jumping.
We are not talking about clearing a bar or anything like that. We're talking about the distance between your feet and the ground in an upright position.
I am aware
huge.
Of what a jump is.
No, but I mean, if you make it sound like he's doing a Fosbury flop when he's doing a header. He's not. It's absolutely
2.5 feet.
78 centimetres.
Are you at the live show going to... Can we see how high you can jump?
Oh, he'll damage himself.
Pal of mine is a fitness instructor. He can do, from a standing start, he can jump onto the counter of the bar in our local pub, which is very impressive.
The last time you did a somersault, didn't you crack a rib?
Well, I tore cartilage or something. That still hurts. How long ago was that?
Months.
Yeah.
He's good at jumping. We know. Yeah, I mean,
no, he's perhaps the best header of the ball that I've ever seen. Probably we've ever seen. Would you say that?
I'm trying to think. I thought Rudy Gested was always good in the air, wasn't he?
Van Dijk's pretty good.
I mean, of his 682 career goals, 127 left foot, 430 right foot, 123 headers.
Heading is an underrated skill, actually.
Very much so.
And I think what's interesting is there are lots of people who are very good at heading it, but aren't very good at any other part of football. And Cristiano Ronaldo quite good at those other parts too.
Yes.
Sid said on Monday it was important for Atletico to attack at least for the first 20 minutes. And they didn't really do anything.
Well, I thought they deserved to go out. Their approach was pretty spineless. They made no effort to score. They just wanted to protect their lead, and they paid the price for it. And when everything was starting to go horribly wrong, they didn't seem to do anything to change their approach. And I wanted them to advance, but I have very little sympathy for them.
And people were comparing Atletico and Juve, saying they were quite similar in many ways. Allegri and Simeone, very pragmatic managers and so forth. But the difference, I mean, Allegri has shown himself to be far more flexible and far more attack-minded than Simeone was. I mean, I have to say, I'm with Barry here. I couldn't understand quite what their plan was. Just wait for Ronaldo to kill us, as he's done so often in the past. 25 goals in 33 games against Atletico Madrid.
We mentioned overhauls of Bayern Munich and Real Madrid recently. You know, those old Atletico defenders are starting to look really old, aren't they? You know, the one Franz and the and the Godins, do they need a clear out as well? I mean, yeah, this huge European scrap heap. That's
we were talking with some French friends, wondering if they were not ideal targets for PSG. You know, always buying the players who are like Dani Alves, you know, people like that, who are coming, who are still there or thereabouts, but definitely on the way down. And they were, I suppose so. I mean, Godin is what, 34 now? Juanfran, also over 30. Quite a large percentage of the squad is over 30. And the people, part of the squad who were genuinely the main engines behind Atletico's success.
Was it just me, or did anyone else? All the gushing tributes to Cristiano Ronaldo yesterday, obviously it was a wonderful performance by him, but I found them all quite distasteful because he has these quite very serious rape allegations hanging over him. He clearly has a case to answer, questions to answer, which he's, you know, dodging and going to great expense to dodge. And I'm not sure, what do you have a caveat at the end of each article, or does everything come with a giant asterisk? But personally, it didn't sit well with me, but I'm not sure what we're supposed to do about it.
Well, ESPN reported on Tuesday that Catherine Mayorga's civil suit against Ronaldo has stalled. She's attempting to sue him, accusing him of rape dating back to 2009. ESPN said a hold-up's primarily because Ronaldo has still not officially been served notice of the lawsuit. Mayorga's lawyer and associates have been unsuccessful serving Ronaldo in Italy.
What they need to do is just give the papers to some journalist, and they can, you know, or if someone masquerading as a fan who can offer them to him to sign, and then as soon as he puts his hand on them, you're served.
Yeah. Ronaldo said at the time, "I refuse to feed the media spectacle created by people seeking to promote themselves at my expense. My clear conscience will thereby allow me to await the tranquility, the results of any and all investigations." Back on the pitch, Giorgio Chiellini, the dive at the end. I mean, because when you see Atletico v Juve, you do instantly think, "Oh, this is a bounty of shithousery, right? There are so many on that pitch. You just sort of want Ramos and Pepe to sign for one of those things. You've got almost everyone there, but at the end, I actually thought he committed a foul. I actually thought it was a penalty because he completely barges, not shoulder. I think it was Morata, was it Morata? I forget, right at the end. And then, like, has this sort of spasm. You know, that sort of weird thing that players sometimes do when they sort of flick their... I mean, it's just so... No one in pain would ever do it, because unless you are currently being electrocuted by Rowdy Roddy Piper, right?
You know, one of those things that you put on your hand, like the dream fish. It's like that, when it flips over.
Yes, exactly.
He did that precisely because he knew he had had committed a foul, and this was a pen.
I don't know if anyone else thought it was a pen. No one mentioned it at the time. I mean, the ball was back to the keeper. He was trying to waste time at the end. And look, I know he's
mission accomplished.
A wonderful footballer, but he is unbearable. I mean, I remember, because you only really notice, you only get angry with shithouses when it's against your team, right? And so when Juve put Spurs out last year, then I noticed quite how unbearable he is. You know, but I suppose he's really good as well.
You're talking about pens. Could I just mention, en passant, we talked about the game in the first part, but there was a pen on Salah that wasn't whistled, given.
Okay.
When he was fouled, stumbled, half kept his balance, shot, missed the target. That should have been given as a penalty.
No, I agree with you.
No advantage there, but there you go.
Barcelona 5, Lyon 1.
Oh dear, do we have to talk about
that? Well, we do, and I actually thought Lyon had a little bit of a chance in this game. I don't know why.
When they come back to 2-1, yes. Mm. You thought the chance would have been Barca's complacency, and as long as it was only 1-0 down, I thought Lyon has still got a chance because they've got a few players in there, like Fekir, for example, who can create something extraordinary, and it's 1-0, 87th minute, and Barca think, well, that's all right, we've qualified. They are a bit more relaxed. Then Lyon equalizes and defends like madmen for the last 10 minutes. But no, it was it wasn't embarrassing because at least Lyon put up some kind of a fight. But the chasm in terms of quality was for all to see. I mean, we have to remember that the 0-0 in the first leg was probably the most, I was going to say deceitful result. I mean, Barcelona had shot 23 times on target. 23 times at Anthony Lopez's goal. So it was to be expected that something like this would happen. But I not mean, good for French football. You're talking about, we were talking about German football, but French football as well, not too good.
Messi, you know, was wonderful. The Panenka, the second goal. But I because he's always talked about as just a completely one-footed player, that kind of very deft cross for Piqué was a sign that he also can kick the ball quite beautifully with his right foot.
Has anybody ever really genuinely said that? He's not that good with his right foot?
I don't recall ever hearing that, I must say.
Huh. Have I just made that up in my own mind?
Never heard anything negative about Messi ever.
Not of that kind anyway.
I've definitely heard some footballing dinosaurs saying he's quite one-footed. I mean, he's quite, you know, his left foot's clearly the foot you'd pick when you were building your masterful footballer. Well, I take it back then, but that's good to be corrected.
So if you were making up your perfect footballer in that terms, how much of it would be Cristiano Ronaldo and how much of it would be Lionel Messi?
Good question, isn't it? I mean, because you take the outside of Modric's right foot.
The outside? Oh, my goodness, it's getting
technical here.
If you're going to the toes.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to.
I think we should Lego build something.
And I'm taking the calves of Shaqiri, obviously, but I'm taking all of Lionel Messi's left foot.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Except for penalties, where I'd take Kevin Pressman's, obviously. Lyon president Jean-Michel Aulas said if Messi had been playing for us, maybe the result would have been different.
I hadn't heard this one.
Yeah.
I mean, Jean-Michel Aulas, yes, is quite funny at times. This is a good one.
It's a fair point.
He also
isn't it?
Blamed. I think he also blamed the defeat on the penalty.
Okay.
Which was not a penalty, apparently.
Okay.
I mean, Suarez.
Arguably, it was a penalty.
Yes. I think so.
So you think City are favourites, Barry? Would you say Barcelona are the team to beat Philippe in this eight?
I said Juve a while ago. I'm staying with Juve.
I say Juve.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
It would be lovely to see Juve up against City or Barca, wouldn't it?
I think anyone could win it.
Ajax?
Yeah, possibly.
Why not?
Is it anyone but Porto can win it?
Porto are all right.
Yeah, they were all right, actually.
Okay.
Why not?
I don't think they're as good as the other ones. I mean, about my... I don't want to expose
it's
my
It's one of those
Portuguese
years when
knowledge.
Nobody's really, I think, above their own selves, so to speak. You know, even the English clubs, we should remember Tottenham, the way they qualified for the round of 16. Liverpool were good, but were not fantastic. Manchester City have played against nobody so far.
I was very impressed with Porto when they eliminated Roma, but... You know, Roma aren't all that, so it's difficult to gauge. You know, I don't watch Porto, so with any kind of regularity, that's the only time I've seen them play this season.
With the bookies, City 5-2 favourites, then Barca 10-3, Juve 4-1, Liverpool 9-2, and your outsiders 12s on United, 14s on Spurs, 25-1 Ajax, and 50-1 on Porto. The final in Madrid. And no Madrid representation in the quarterfinals of the Champions League for the first time since 2010. It was interesting, isn't it? And in last bit of Champions League news, Neymar is under investigation by UEFA for his Instagram post after the defeat by Manchester United. He described that late penalty decision as a disgrace.
He used quite strong words, if I'm not mistaken.
He said the penalty doesn't exist. Four guys who know nothing about football watch a slow motion replay in front of the television, etc., etc. So pray for Neymar.
The thing is that if it was from one of his social networks, if it came from one of his social networks, as whatever they're called, it's obviously his community manager who wrote this tweet.
Say something like, it's a disgrace. I mean, to be fair, I agree with him. It was, in my opinion, and we'll get onto the new handball rules in part three.
He must have sanctioned it, though. Even if somebody else wrote it, he must have sanctioned it. There's no way on earth they'd be that strong speaking on his behalf. That's his reputation.
No. I mean, those accounts are watertight in terms of... not Patrice Evra's Instagram account, of course. But
when he sucks
I hope you
raw,
missed out
when
on
he
this
sucks
one.
A raw chicken.
No. What he said about Jerome Rotten and there's this big media fight in France. I mean, the language he used was absolutely appalling. And he actually threatened to physically harm him.
Oh.
Yes, indeed. And but normally everything is watertight. You know, you've got people before a tweet or a post is sent, it's been checked and rechecked that it's not going to harm the image of the player. So,
but I still think they've got a phone and they're angry and it's capable. You know, they sometimes.
Yeah,
so we're going to go
my
past.
My guess would be that Neymar posted that himself. Seemed to come from the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are we going to see now players, you know, going even one further than Mario Balotelli? So they're going to do that during the game. They will have like a keyboard implanted in the palm of their hand and they'll be able to send messages from the pitch.
Yeah.
Or like Siri. They could have like microphones while they're playing. And
or just a camera
messages.
On them. They could just go live and you could watch the whole game on Neymar.
Oh, like a GoPro. Like
that
a GoPro.
Will happen.
Yeah.
That will happen.
And they'll get, and you pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
Subscription.
Well, they do. They have something similar, don't they? Sky do that. You can follow a player.
Player cam. No, that's player cam. I went out a long time ago.
But they have jockey cam and big horse race meetings. So one of the jockeys will have a camera on his or her helmet, and you get to see it from their point of view.
You just get motion sickness
good.
With that. It's horrible.
You get a real idea of how dangerous and chaotic it is in the middle of a bunch of horses. You go around it. Hurdle race, without jumping 7 or 8 hurdles without actually seeing one.
When Emil Heskey signed for the Newcastle Jets, they did Heskey Cam in the A-League. I interviewed him the other day. I asked him if he ever watched it back. He didn't, which is a great shame. And the Football League. Last night, Norwich went back to the top of the Championship after a 3-2 win over Hull. 5 wins in a row for them. Leeds had gone top on Tuesday after they blew away Reading in the first half at the Majeski 3-0. All the goals in the first 45 minutes, 2 for Pablo Hernandez. Sheffield United were 1 up on Brentford when Gary Medine was sent off in the 35th minute, but they held on. Won 2-0 in the end. Playoffs chasing Bristol City were held by bottom side Ipswich, but presumably Lee Johnson won't get fired after getting the same result that was the final nail for Darren Moore at West Brom, who managed fine without him. 3-0 win over Swansea. You were there, Faye.
I was. And it was a really weird game, actually. They were all right, West Brom. They looked a bit nervous, but they still came away with a 3-0 win. The penalty, though, was the talking point, the Swansea penalty.
Bersanchalina.
My goodness me. I actually felt really sorry for him from a human perspective because it was a bit humiliating.
What was the score at the time?
It was 1-0,
right.
I think.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah.
Okay.
It was just before the end of the first half.
Talk us through it.
I kind of watched it in slow motion from the other end. So I was watching his back. It looked like he was just going to pass it to someone rather than it was just so weird. When you watch the replays, he slipped. It was just awkward, but it happened in slow motion and everybody was sitting there going, did that just happen? I did feel very, very sorry for him. And obviously then Swansea went on to lose 3-0. So yeah.
And what was great about it was, you know, a defender is following in, because if a striker was following in, they could have put it away, but a defender was following in so quickly and literally just lamped it out of play, and it just, that looked sensational. Is it better, I mean, better, worse than Peter Devine's back in 1991? Peter Devine has the excuse that it was this very sandy pitch, right? I tweeted it out this morning if you want to go and find it.
Was it as bad as Robert Pires' attempt at a little pass to Thierry Henry?
That was just embarrassing.
Yes.
I think these are worse. There's a sort of slip and a fall which makes them humiliating.
I don't know, though. I think that's worse because it was planned.
It was planned.
As opposed to these were, you know, embarrassing moments.
Pat Nevin took an absolutely amazing one step where he just one step and side-footed it, just the keeper who just stood there and picked it up. It's a bit like when the keeper doesn't dive for a Panenka, because they just catch it and carry on with the game. They don't. You sort of feel you need to stop and acknowledge how bad it was. And when the game continues, it makes it look even worse.
Something which happened to the French goalkeeper, Michael Landreau, when he took a penalty, and which was a Panenka. Not a good idea to miss it when you're a keeper and you're taking it.
Oh, right. Not in a shootout.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, right, in a shootout. I was going to say during a game.
No, in a shootout.
The best thing about these things is then you can just go on to Google and YouTube and just watch a succession of really embarrassing, awful penalties and spend your entire afternoon doing it.
There was the Simone Zaza as well. You remember the 1,000 steps penalty?
Oh, when he ballooned it into Rosette. Yeah, joyous. In the playoff hunt, good night for Preston, who won at Middlesbrough, and Villa, who won at Forest. They're both closing in on the top six in League
Wasn't
One.
Wasn't there, I think, some sort of row between John Terry and Roy Keane on the sideline at that one?
Apparently, the fourth official was standing in the middle of them. That's not a place you want to be.
But who wins? I mean, Keane wins that, doesn't he?
I don't know. I think he's a bit of a pantomime villain. I don't think he's all that hard.
Do you? Are you saying you could have him?
No.
No, okay.
He was yellow carded at the Stoke match I was at the other week as well. He's got new form, taking it into a whole new level.
In League One, Dirty Luton won again.
Whoa.
It's outrageous, isn't it?
Dirty Luton.
You're doing so well. 1-0 at Bradford. The highlight being Sonny Bradley.
I just love this video.
What do we call it? Anti-shithousery?
Yeah.
Where he's pushed by someone who's about half the size of him.
Yeah.
And then he pretends to fall over and then he just puts his hand in the air like a sort of Scooby-Doo baddie and goes, whoa. And, you know, it's just compared to a Chiellini, you know, who would have tried to, or Dzeko's, you know, falling like a giant oak tree. It was just sensational.
It's the ultimate two-finger signal. It's brilliant. Mm.
Second v third was exciting. Barnsley 0, Sunderland 0. In League Two, we've mentioned you were at Sinsel Bank, Faye, in the miserable weather. Lincoln 2, Paul Scholes, Oldham 0. Looked awfully wet, didn't it?
It wasn't too wet. In terms of wetness, I think it was worse everywhere else. It actually wasn't too bad. It was the wind that was horrendous. And I just want to kind of big up, but also say, oh my goodness me, you're frustrating. The fantastic Lincoln fans that stand right next to the gantry have got one of those machines that you crank up and it does the...
Well, like an air raid siren. What?
Every corner. Now, when you're trying to work and concentrate on a game and every 2 minutes they're opening the gate to the gantry to... they're really nice guys and chat with them the whole game, but oh my God, that noise. I couldn't sleep.
What, is it really
on Tuesday
like...
night? Oh, yeah. On Tuesday night, that was... I didn't sleep at all because that noise was ingrained in my brain.
But what about the really old fans who remember the war? You know, this sort of give them flashbacks every time Lincoln get a corner.
Potentially. And they had a number of corners. So, yeah, it was... But to be honest, Oldham had played well until Jose Baxter was sent off, but it was an awful red card flying in.
And to make it worse, at full time, you're still in Lincoln, Faye, aren't you, Richard?
Yeah.
I'm only kidding.
And facing 4 hours to get home, yeah.
Only kidding. Yes, Cambridge 0, Crewe 0. The highlights of that game on the app were so... I mentioned the terrible highlights of Huddersfield on Monday, where the one highlight on Match of the Day was Steve Mounier just crossing a ball out of play. Literally, there were just three, like a shot that was blocked on the edge of the box and they carried on. You think that can't be the highlight, but there you are.
I've got Huddersfield on Saturday, so I'm doing well this week.
big win at the bottom for Notts County, 3-1 at Carlisle. The Carlisle goal by Hallam Hope, classic Dion Dublin, just waiting for the keeper to put the ball on the ground. Best supporting actor to the other Carlisle centre forward, who sort of stood there for a bit as if to make the Carlisle keeper kick it from his hands and then backed off as I go, fair enough, you can roll it out. And then Hope runs in and scores.
But they still lost.
But they still lost, so yeah.
Why did no one tell him? I don't... I mean, hats off.
Hallam Hope was hiding by the post, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a very good point. Or a fan shouting, he's behind you.
Would be useful. He isn't.
Yeah.
Is it shades too of Gary Crosby, Andy Dibble?
A little
bit, except that was the header rather out of his hand.
Fit bar time. Barry, talk to us.
Well, there was some FITBA Scottish Cup quarterfinal replays and Aberdeen beat Rangers 2-0. Stephen Gerrard was seething with rage after the game. So we let the supporters down. I take full responsibility for it. And then having taken full responsibility for it, proceeded to very publicly dump on his players again. He said Aberdeen deserved it. They bullied us in certain areas of the pitch. They wanted it more in certain areas of the pitch, and that's a major source of concern for me. Said he wasn't, you know, he was too angry to go in and talk to his players. You know, I'm just going to wait till he cooled down a bit. And in the Scottish media, that this result has been, you know, Aberdeen stunned Rangers, shocked Rangers, portrayed as a shock, but they've played six times this season. Aberdeen have only lost one, and they've knocked Rangers out of both cups. So I don't think it was that much of a surprise. Niall McGinn scored the opener for them. Conor McLennan scored the second. And Rangers dominated play, but a really good defensive performance from Aberdeen. And they're through to the final now, where they'll play Celtic. And the other one, Hearts beat Partick Thistle from the Championship. And it's 2-1. Partick Thistle seemed to have been denied a what should have been a penalty in injury time. And their manager for a Christoph Beira foul on Miles Storey, and the Thistle manager reckoned that if they'd got that penalty and scored it, they were dominating at the time, and he was felt rather aggrieved. But anyway, Hearts go through and they'll face Inverness in the other semi-final. And those stories pale into insignificance, really, when we go down to League Two. And the poor old Berwick.
Oh yeah,
social media guy
Dom Gall. Yes, we you know, support Dom Gall. We save the Dom Gall one.
Dom Gall volunteered to do the. He's basically Berwick's social media department, and he used to live tweet games. And he had, you know, quite considering Berwick's lowly status, he had quite a following. He's quite funny. At the weekend, he tweeted that Johnny Harvey's the Berwick manager, and he tweeted that the Cowdenbeath manager, Gary Bolton, has just told Johnny Harvey to take his face for a shite. And his tweet went viral because it was very funny. Berwick were playing again on Tuesday, and from their official account, the tweet came, "Please note there will be no updates this evening as I've been relieved of my duties following Saturday's tweet. Apologies for any inconvenience.
So convenience Dom, would be funnier, Jim.
Yeah.
Dom Gall is the Berwick media guy, or is no longer, because someone at Berwick, I think it was the vice chairman, he said, who also had access to the account, deleted it. The tweets. So he was tweeting, the other guy was deleting, and then he got fired. So
he's surely going to get an amazing job out of this, isn't
he? If you want to support, throw your support behind poor old Dom. It's at Dom F. Gall, G-A-L-L. That's his Twitter handle.
He could just go to Berwick Games and tweet anyway, couldn't he?
Well, he can, yes, but not from the official account. I presume they've changed the password. But he got involved in 2013. It was purely voluntary. He has a bit of a history of amusing tweets. He once announced, these are all coming from the Berwick, official Berwick social media feed, there will be no live coverage of tonight's match as the Berwick social media department is at Creamfields.
Yes.
And on another occasion, he was announced he was lost somewhere in a housing estate and apologised for the delay in live tweeting what was going on in a Berwick game. So, yeah, it's a bit of a humour failure there. And it's just...
He says that a generational gap has kind of resulted in that lack of humour. The Berwick board don't really... Yeah. You get can, that actually going viral is pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, you can just imagine, and who knows who runs Berwick, but, you know, it's that old men in suits.
Well, Berwick knows who runs Berwick.
Berwick does know. Producer Jonathan says, this is going on an incredibly long amount of time. You're right, it is. That'll do for part two. We'll start part three in just a sec. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. IFAB have changed the law to handball. It's a nice acronym, isn't it, IFAB?
Mm-hmm.
It now states a handball is awarded if a player makes his body bigger with his arm. Okay.
Right.
It's a ridiculous sentence. It's all
sounds slightly obscene.
Oh, God.
Anyway,
honestly. We're set on feathers this morning.
It's automatically an offence if the arm is above shoulder.
Just hold on.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you? Seriously. It's now also clear there is no handball offence if the ball deflects onto the arm or if the ball hits a player who is using his arm for support. Like a Zuma frame. Anyway,
is this from the Berwick on Tweed official account?
I really thought this would be one of the most boring parts of the pod, but I've enjoyed it.
So that means, like, for example, the penalty that was given against PSG with Presnel Kimpembe is definitely a penalty. Stop talking about it, guys, because it makes his body bigger. So because his arm is at a 45 or 90 degrees angle with his body, so therefore he's, you know, widening the surface.
From next season, this. So in which case it's not
willing or unwilling.
But your arm occupies the same amount of space no matter where it is. So if I hold it out from my body, I'm leaving an arm-shaped gap beside my body. So am I making it bigger? I don't know.
But also, if it deflects onto your arm, then that's what I don't understand.
So no pen in this case, isn't it?
So it's cleared up nothing, right? Or it's taken out deliberate, which is a good thing, right? Because
that's subjective.
But the thing about that shot was you watch it in super slow-mo, so it looks like Kimpembe's got time to make all these decisions, but actually he's got no time at all. So, well, it hasn't really solved anything, in my opinion. But anyway, other rules. Subs are now allowed to leave the field at the nearest point to them, rather than a halfway line, to stop time wasting.
Thank goodness
for
that.
Well, you say thank goodness, but given how fans are baying at players these days, I'm not sure how successful that's going to be if a player has to walk all around past home or away fans. There is a point to that which might make it.
But then they would still have to do that if they were injured, wouldn't they? If they came off that way. So.
Yeah, I suppose so. Maybe I just should have more faith in football fans. A goalkeeper must now have at least one part of his foot on or in line with the goal line on a penalty. So he can make a big stride with one, sort of a big lunge forwards. That sort of will affect how far to the side you can go.
Maybe that's what Bersancelina was thinking about yesterday.
Possibly. A goalkeeper must now have... I know that one. A ref can now allow a quick free kick to be taken by an attacking team, even if he were about to book the offending player. This can now be done at the end of the attacking move. That's good. Mm-hmm. And the end of the contested drop ball, as IFAB believes... they can lead to a manufactured restart, which is exploited unfairly, e.g. kicking the ball out for throw-in deep in the opponent's half, or an aggressive confrontation. Max writes, pod special about the ramifications to Scott Brown and Fitbar. Well, that's a great shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
I like a drop ball, particularly when, if it's Scott Brown, and I can't remember who he contested one with earlier this season, that they just completely ignored the ball and kicked lumps out of each other.
Philippe, before the pod, you said you wanted to spend a minute on Copa America 2020.
Yeah.
When you say you want a minute on these things, it's normally 30 to 40 minutes, but crack on.
I see producer Jonathan tearing his hair already. So, no, I'll crack on. Basically, the Copa America 2020, CONMEBOL, the South American Confederation, is pushing the idea of having the tournament staged in... hold your breath, Colombia and Argentina.
Okay.
Distance between Bogota and Buenos Aires, 6,800 kilometers.
Marvelous.
That's a co-hosted event, Copa America. Absolutely fantastic. It's a great week for FIFA and confederations because they're in Miami at the moment. Those of FIFA Council who have dared to make the trip, because it can be a bit hot, shall we say, when you go into FBI territory. So two members of the council have not gone, i.e. Sheikh Salman and Ahmad Ahmad. And they're pushing through with the idea of the 48-team World Cup as early as 2022, and also with the idea of a Club World Cup with 24 clubs, which would basically mean that a number of players would have 48 hours of recuperation time during the season at some points, which is completely mad, but it's generally
Say that again?
Yes, the calendar would become so blocked that players who are involved in this competition, the Club World Cup, at times could face only a rest of only 48 hours between games because it's so congested that...
So you've got the World Cup in 2022 is in the winter, right?
Okay.
So when would the Club World Cup?
At the moment, nothing has been decided yet. You know, it's the plan that Gianni Infantino has of getting all this massive, beautiful money from Saudi Arabia so that they, in a way, are sponsoring almost a new Nations League and a new Club World Cup. Which means an extension to the season, more games played, and the net result of that is that the players who are involved in this competition would only have 48 hours at times between games.
Does anybody think it's a good idea apart from him?
No.
Oh.
FIFPro has already said very clearly that it was out of the question.
The clubs?
Well, UEFA has clubs. No, I mean they have, I suppose the EFL will have to do say something about that. EPFL, excuse me. And at the moment, no. It's all at the moment being discussed in Miami and elsewhere. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
And that could happen very, very quickly. 24 team club World Cup. Great, isn't it?
Well. More pods.
Self-interest is the only thing that drives you.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, there's enough, right? There's enough.
Oh, yes, enough please. Football. Enough.
We need to watch, you know, Wilson won't be able to watch Vera or whatever it is.
It just saturates the quality, doesn't it?
And that's coming from you. And you had to spend an evening in Lincoln in a freezing gale. Tonight, Europa League, Dynamo Kiev, Chelsea. Chelsea 3-0 up and that. Arsenal, Rennes, 3-1 up, Rennes. Do you give Arsenal a chance here, Philippe?
Yeah, I give them a chance because Rennes are a team which actually goes forward and tries to play and can be sometimes a little bit loose at the back. On the other hand, the strides they've made with this new and quite wonderful young French manager, Julien Stéphan, makes it, I mean, who are taking this competition extremely seriously, which is not the case with French teams in the past. And they were absolutely terrific in the previous round away from home when they beat Real Betis in Sevilla. And just as they were absolutely terrific against Arsenal in Rennes itself. So, yeah, on one hand, I can understand Arsenal being a bit worried, but on the other hand, I can see also how they could go past a Rennes team, which again tends to play a little bit too much and is not used to defending this kind of advantage. They're favourites, and they've never been before that in that competition.
Weekend has the FA Cup quarterfinals and some Premier League games as well. In the Premier League on Saturday, you've got Bournemouth, Newcastle, Burnley, Leicester, West Ham, Huddersfield. In the FA Cup, you've got Watford, Palace. Watford, who rested all those players, Swansea, Man City, and Wolves, Manchester United. On Sunday in the Premier League, Fulham, Liverpool, and Everton, Chelsea. And the FA Cup, Millwall, Brighton. And in the Championship, Leeds play Sheffield United. That is a big one, isn't it? And it's the semi-final of the FA Trophy this weekend. AFC Fylde versus Stockport and Leyton Orient versus Telford. Some news out of Manchester City, and we've given them quite a lot of criticism recently for various things off the pitch, but this is a positive story. They're launching a survivor scheme for the victims of Barry Bunnell that will lead to the Premier League champions offering compensation packages, adding up to several million pounds, and an apology to the players who were sexually abused during their time in the club's junior setup. Some good news from Hakim El Araibi. If you remember the Bahraini-born footballer who was held in a Thai prison for several months, he's received his Australian citizenship. He said, "Finally, no country can follow me now because I'm Australian. I'm now 100% safe in this country." We had Craig Foster on here who did, among other people, did marvellous work to get him free. And
on the flip side, though, he is Australian now.
Yeah,
what it's a cross to bear.
What are you trying to say about my future offspring, who almost certainly will be Australian if they ever appear? They seem quite noisy children. But that's my own existential crisis. Producer Jonathan writes, "Parental advisory, everyone." Zidane's jeans at the presser on Monday. Fucking hell! How did
this from a man who is wearing black dungarees and looks like a goth play school presenter?
Turn-ups. I think I had a stage of turn-ups on my jeans a while ago. But
I didn't know they were a thing. I see a lot of, well, actually, I see a lot of them around the Guardian building now where there are a lot of hipsters wandering around. I don't know what any of them do.
Is that hipsterish? Really?
But I've never been one for the turn-ups. But even if they are fashionable, Zinedine Zidane is far too old to be rocking skinny jeans with turn-ups.
But those turn-ups are so long that if he actually pulled them down, it would be like he had a romper suit on, you know. So he has to. He's just bought trousers that are too long, and he's just had to be creative. Faye, any thoughts?
I'm just having a look. I've not seen this pic. Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, it almost looks like he's wearing leg warmers.
Mm. Happy or not it's happy like with
they've
this?
Been
I think he's rocking
all.
It. They go with the trainers. There you go, Philippe. They go with the trainers.
Bloody right. hell, that's
it kind
awful.
Of works.
Can you say bloody hell, that's awful on mic, please, Philippe?
Bloody hell, that's awful. I haven't seen this. My goodness.
See, I think that will end skinny jeans with turnips now for everyone. It's like when David Cameron, you know, say, or Theresa May say they like a particular band, and that band immediately, their career is over.
LD says, you need to pick five footballers, past or present, for a penalty shootout. If they score all five, you live. If any miss, you die. It's a bit extreme, but it could be a game show that we could host, Barry, one mm-hmm. day. Who are they and who is shooter five? So let's do this quickly.
I've got my number one.
Letitia?
I could have him, absolutely.
Letitia, for me, definitely, he'd be my save my life
He'd
pen.
Be the fifth penalty, would he?
I wasn't actually listening. I was still looking at Zidane's
five penalty
jeans.
Takers.
Mario Balotelli.
Balotelli. Do we want Signore for one-step penalty
taker? Kevin Pressman.
Pressman.
Okay.
Letitia, who have you got?
I've got two suggestions. One is Paoletta.
Okay.
And the other, which I think is obvious, is Cuauhtémoc Blanco, who I think scored something like 75 of the 76 pens he ever took for his club and for Mexico.
Graham Alexander, possibly. And why not give Gareth Southgate one, just for a bit of jeopardy at the end? Ollie says, who wins the Gold Cup?
Cheltenham.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Harry.
I thought we were talking about CONCACAF for a second.
Yeah, no. I'm talking about the Cheltenham Gold Cup tomorrow. Who's going to win it?
I haven't a clue.
All right. Aren't you working on it all week?
Yes.
Okay, great.
There
That's
used
tomorrow.
To be a horse called Carruthers that ran in the Gold Cup.
Is there?
Yeah, not anymore.
Oh.
No.
And Peter says, is Barry any clearer on what happened in Parliament last night? If he is, could he explain it to us on the pod?
No. I have no idea what happened. As far as I could tell, Theresa May voted against herself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why anyone would do that. I'm completely lost. Like, I was pretty confused anyway, but that just... Now I have... literally no idea what the hell is going on.
I don't think anyone does, do they?
I mean, I don't comment on politics on Twitter because it's a place I don't want to go. There are various areas into which I will not venture. But my ignorance of the whole Brexit thing is quite breathtaking. But I don't see how anyone could... If I had to write about that for the newspaper last night to a tight deadline, I would... probably have just resigned on the spot because even if you know what you're doing, I don't see how anyone could stay on top of that stuff.
All right, well, now you know, and good luck with your lives, everyone. Philippe, thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Good luck with your life.
Good luck with my life,
yeah,
absolutely.
Faye, good luck. You know, you like me, we're proper British, we're fine. you and I won the war between us, so this won't be a problem. We can just eat rabbits.
You see that Marc Francois?
Yeah.
MP, what a clown he is. He keeps telling everyone he was in the army. And it turns out it's his territorial army.
Is he your MP?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Mine's Kate Hawley. She's an even bigger
oath. Anyway, look, that'll do
so
as well.
So not commenting on politics.
Barry, cheers, Baz.
You're welcome.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.